On this edition, we're playing an encore presentation of an interview I did with the Indigo Girls. I believe it was May of last year. And I'll have a little bit of commentary regarding today's world situations. I'm Richard Brendan, and the conversations and music begin now. Hey, welcome to the program. Before we get to that interview I did with Indigo Girls, first, here's a word from some of our sponsors.
Course in Wellness provides information on how to change the way we feed the current and future generations and upgrade our plant-based for vital living at all ages. Course in Wellness is a place to increase respect for and knowledge about the plants that sustain life and allow repair and restoration, both herbal and medicinal plants and the foundational edible plants. For more information, visit Course in Wellness on Facebook.
This WICR program is underwritten in part by Georgetown Natural Foods Market, located at 4375 Georgetown Road on Indy's west side. They carry organic produce and bulk body care products such as shampoo, lotion, soaps, and shower gel. Their kitchen serves soup, sandwiches, hot entrees, and carryout food. Plus, they have a juice bar. Georgetown Natural Foods Market, located at 4375 Georgetown Road on Indy's west side. Their website is georgetownmarket.com.
Richard Brendan, Bringing Love to Life is underwritten in part by Anthony Team Realty, an affiliate of FC Tucker Company. Jim Anthony and his team have the resources to assist you in buying or selling a home and have a full slate of real estate services in Indianapolis, Central Indiana, and beyond. To contact Jim and the Anthony team, their phone number is 317-844-4200 or online at anthonyteamrealty.com.
Amy Ray and Emily Saliers are Indigo Girls. Rolling Stone describes them as the ideal duet partners. Their voices soar and swoop as one, alternately raucous and soothing. When they sing together, they radiate a sense of shared purpose that adds muscle to their lanky, deeply felt-folked, tinged pop songs. Together they write, arrange, record, and perform music, which over the course of 25 years has become a vital part of the lives of their legion of devoted fans around the world, informing and rewarding them day to day. With 12 original studio albums, 3 live records, various greatest hits compilations, a rarities, and a Christmas record to their credit, the iconic duo continues to challenge itself creatively over and over again, adding to a body of work that contains such contemporary classic songs as Galileo, Closer to Fine, Love of Our Lives, Making Promises, Get Out the Map, Moment of Forgiveness, Least Complicated, and Share the Moon. After numerous Grammy nominations and awards, and gold and platinum certifications, and decades of touring in clubs, arenas, and everything in between, Indigo Girls remain active and relevant, always viewing their music as a fresh opportunity for exploration and discovery. I've been a fan of their music for years and have so appreciated the work they do in activism around the world. Amy and Emily, welcome to the program. What a joy to have you on today.
Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. I have so loved your music over the years, but probably more than that, I've so appreciated the depth of your activism also, because the term that we use here, and I know it's one that a dear friend Holly Neer uses a lot, and that's a social change artist. You guys are very much that. You're not just supporting causes to sell more albums. This has been a part of both of your lives for a long, long time, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. But I think ever since we were young and kind of starting to discover the world of community work and activism, even in high school, with things as simple as like a soup kitchen, you know.
Yeah.
We were both taught that you give back to your community, and I think it's just like a natural way for us to live, and music mm-hmm. is just like one part of making that happen.
Yeah, yeah. We have listeners here all over Central Indiana, and now because of us podcasting on the internet all over the world. And so for those few people who don't know who the Indigo Girls are, and I can't imagine that by now, because you guys have been at this a long, long time, and the quality just seems to get higher and higher and higher. I just want to take a step back, and then, of course, there's some really important things that have been happening here in Indiana, and now this week in the Supreme Court, so I want to talk about that, too. But what intrigued me is, I mean, you guys have known each other like all your lives, since grade school.
Yep, that's right.
And you still love one another.
Yeah, it turns out it was a good beginning and a good middle and no ending in sight yet. But, I mean, Amy and I, we live in different places in Georgia, and we have different communities. And but we have the same set of values, and we really love making music together as Indigo Girls. But we also allow each other a lot of freedom. We write our songs separately, and we have a lot of individual projects. Amy's just released her sixth solo album, and I co-own a restaurant and write and do programs with my dad. And so we have different creative outlets besides Indigo Girls. So, I mean, we do love each other. We're like family, and we sort of have, the way we write and then the way we arrange and our whole approach to making music and sharing it is very much aligned.
Yeah.
So it's just been a fantastic journey.
Yeah. I know both of you, when you got out of high school, and there was a year apart, I believe, between both of you, but you both went to different colleges, but you ended up both at Emory. And it was there that I would say the magic began to happen. Amy, what was it about this collaboration with Emily? Did you know right off we really are onto something here?
Yeah, but I mean, that in the way that you feel that way when you're in high school and you're excited about music, and I mean, it was just fun, you know. It was like, not we're onto something for our careers, but we're onto a really great way to have a good time, and this feels great, and it felt, you know, like magic, and the harmony was just really fun, and for me, it was just like a moment of like, oh, this is really amazing. Like, it just felt like the right thing, and kind of just what I wanted to be doing all the time.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I don't think I thought of it as a career, you know, at that point.
Amy, when did the love and passion for music start in you in your life? How old were you?
As early as I can remember.
Yeah.
I always loved music, and it was always, there was music playing in my house, and my older siblings loved music, and we all took piano lessons, and, you know, music was just a big part of my life. My dad was always singing, and we were at church, you know, singing in the choir, and it was just part of your existence. I couldn't imagine, if I knew anybody that didn't have music in their lives, I was shocked, you know, because it just seemed like it was what everybody did, just like, this is what you do.
Yeah.
So, and I don't mean like to be good at it, I just mean like everybody sings as a family, and everybody, you know, listens to music and loves music and all that stuff. So, I think just from the earliest age I can remember, I started playing guitar when I was around 10.
Okay.
And just as something that I wanted to do to learn to play songs that I was hearing that I really loved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Emily, how about you?
The same as Amy, as far as I can remember. I mean, truthfully, the first human memory I have is putting my hands on a piano at my grandmother's house. I was 2, and there's a picture of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is my first memory. And my grandfather was a professional touring musician in the big band era, and we grew up too. My dad was a classical pianist and played the organ, and my mom played piano, and we all sang, and we sang in church choirs. That's really where I really came to learn about harmony and love singing in community and in with other people. And music played in our house every Saturday. Mom and Dad had a whole bunch of LPs, and it was either jazz or classical that was playing. And we all took lessons, us girls. And so it was everywhere. It was just, you know, just an integral part of our family life and individual life as anything else was.
Yeah. You know, when you hear your music and you look at the lyrics that both of you have contributed to over the years, I'm sure there's a lot of people who think either A, you're partners, or B, you got to be sisters from somewhere because you work so well together. And yet, unlike some duos and certainly some groups out there, you rarely collaborate in writing songs. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
We
go ahead. Yeah, you go ahead.
Oh, you answer it.
we just have always written separately. I mean, we're very simpatico. We work really, really well together. We've never been a couple. We never will be. It's just people might assume that, but it's the furthest thing from the truth. And we just have a way of arranging songs together. So we have to write separately. We can't write together. We tried it once. It just isn't. It was like the wrong end of the magnets or something. Mm-hmm. But we do have a way of, when our songs are finished, coming together whenever we start to practice, either in preparation for making a record or a project, or any kind of recording or performance. We just have a very sort of natural flow to arranging. It's a very democratic process. It's a lot of brainstorming. There's very little ego involved in ideas that don't work, you know, when we're arranging. And whoever wrote the song gets the last word on whether she wants a part or not. And it's just it's a very open and creative process that I learn a lot from and grow from. And I'm glad that Amy writes her own songs, because, I mean, if we just wrote the same or wrote together, it wouldn't be as satisfying. I can't even imagine that it would be nearly satisfying enough to keep going all these years.
Yeah, and also, I want to make sure that you have a new album coming out sometime this year, don't you? Is it fairly soon?
Yeah, our new record comes out on June 2nd.
Oh, how
exciting. And it's called One Lost Day.
Yeah.
And it's our first new record in about 4 years, so we're very excited about it.
I bet you are. It has been a long time. A lot of people have been asking, when is that next one coming out? So people are going to be excited to hear about that and to learn about that. You've created so much great work over the years, and as I said, I also want to talk about your activism, because I've been so impressed with that. But we're going to go to a break. When we do that, the hardest part I have so many of your albums, and it's like, good Lord, I was listening to it so much of your music over the weekend. And then I had a few people who knew you were coming on say, well, this is my favorite song. Can you make sure you play that? There's a couple, though, that mean a lot to me. And so we'll just choose this one first. And I'd like for either one of you to comment on it. We'll go to break, play the song, and come back for more conversation. I think it's one of your earlier hits, and it's called Closer to Fine.
Yep. This is Emily, and I wrote that song. It came out on our first record for Epic Records back in 1989, and it's a song that I wrote just thinking about the different ways that I try to find solace for problems. And you try this, you know, you work out, or you go to church, or you drink a beer, or you take a hike, or whatever it is that people do. And sort of, it was sort of a song to myself, just relax a little bit. The less you seek one and only one answer for, you know, to all your questions in life, the easier time you're going to have of it. So it's a little bit of philosophy and a little bit of a lesson to myself. And it's just about how to feel good by not so seriously seeking one panacea.
Yeah, and I tell you, that's an important message I think we all need to learn right now, given some of the darkness that continues to shine out in the world. And by the way, you mentioned Epic Records. You signed with them in 1988. How cool was that? I mean, you guys are like, what, only like 32? So you must have been like 8 when you signed. That had to be so...
Just out of elementary school.
Yeah, yeah. That had to be so... What was that like, signing to a major album at that time? Do you still remember the rush and the feelings of that?
You know, it was a little bit scary because we had been doing it on our own for so long. And for me, like right after we signed, I was like, oh, I think I just made the biggest mistake of my life kind of feeling. Because giving up control, you know, is hard. And but it was, the whole time period was thrilling, because it was like right after that, we made a record, we went on the road with REM and toured with them, we toured with Hot House Flowers, we played shows with Neil Young, you know, just there was a lot of like getting to play with people that we were really infatuated with, and meeting new people. And I think for us, so much of what was going on that was fun for us was just the music, you know, just who we got to play with and who we got to see. And we were, you know, music fans of a lot of people. And so I think there was a lot going on like that, where we had more sort of just more access and more resources and got to do a lot of really fun stuff. I think getting signed was like one of those things where it was like, this is really cool, and to have what a relief that we've got this opportunity. But the for me, like, the big thrill came, like, right after that, like, just being in the studio and making a new record and everything.
Yeah, yeah. I'm Richard Brendan. We're bringing Love to Life today with the iconic duo Indigo Girls, Amy Ray, Emily Salyers. We're talking about their music, their life. We'll be talking about their activism, and also I want to get their opinions on what's been going on here in Indiana and actually a lot of states across the country. We have a lot of that conversation, a little more music coming up, but first we're going to go to their one of their top biggest hits, early hits actually, Closer to Fine. We'll be right back.
I'm trying to tell you something about my life. Maybe give me insight between black and white. And the best thing you ever done for me is to help me take my life less seriously. It's only life after all. Yeah. Well, darkness has a hunger that's insatiable, and lightness has a call that's hard to hear. And I wrap my fear around me like a blanket. I sail my ship of safety till I sank it. I'm crawling on your shores. And I went to the doctor. I went to the mountains. I looked to the children. I drank from the fountains. There's more than to these questions pointing me in a crooked line, and the less I seek my source for some definitive, closer I am to find. Yeah, closer I am to find. Yeah. And I went to see the doctor of philosophy with a poster of Rasputin and a beer down to his knee. Didn't marry or see a big great movie. He graded my performance. He said he could sit through me. I spent 4 years prostrate to the higher mind. Got my paper and I was free. I went to the doctor. I went to the mountains. I looked to the children. I drank from the fountains. There's more than to these questions pointing me in a crooked line, and the less I seek my source for some definitive, closer I am to find. Yeah, closer I. With a headache like my head against a board, twice as cloudy as I'd been the night before. And I went in seeking clarity. I went to the doctor. I went to the mountains. I looked to the children. I drank from the fountain. We go to the doctor. We go to the mountains. We look to the children. We drink. Pointing me in a crooked line, and the less I seek my source for some definitive, closer I am to find. Closer I am to find. Closer I am to find. Yeah.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Richard Brendan. We're bringing Love to Life today with Amy and Emily, the combine as the Indigo Girls. And I want to talk to you guys about recently what has transpired in Indiana. You know, a lot of us who live here and are trying to raise consciousness were so deeply disappointed by our governor who put his foot in his mouth and signed this insane bill that is still driving away business from this state that was basically a discriminatory bill. And I'm assuming you were somewhat familiar with it because it was on all the national talk shows. He supposedly refined it, but people who know more than I do in many of the top gay rights organizations are saying, no, it still doesn't protect really anybody here in Indiana. I'd like to get your thoughts on that, given the life that you have led and the activism that you've been about. I mean, you're passionate about Native American causes, animal rights, gay rights. What words of wisdom, maybe even hope, could you give to those of us who are listening to this conversation who live in the state of Indiana? I would even add Arkansas, perhaps Georgia, other states as well that are still going through some of this discrimination, which I just can't wrap my head around anymore while we still have that.
Well, I mean, these are interesting times in this country. You know, we say that we've come a long way, and then you have something like this proposed law and then the signing of it in Indiana and then a discussion about all the other states that have it. But it raises a red flag when you have this law signed at this particular time in our history when conservatives are freaking out, you know, that the queer community and gay people finally have a right, a civil right, to get married and enjoy all the same protections and privileges and rights that heterosexual people do. So I think in a climate like those who are fearful about the evolution of civil rights and non-discriminatory ethos in this mm-hmm. country, mm-hmm. their fear becomes exponential. And then as a result of that, you see something like this proposed law in Indiana coming up and then getting passed. And then the economic pressure forces the governor to try to change it, but it doesn't really, really protect all the people who could be harmed for it. So I think you have to recognize it, that it is what it is. It's not a harmless thing. There's a reason why there was such a backlash and an outcry about it and the reality of its discriminatory nature. And, you know, the same thing is coming up for vote in Georgia. Thank goodness. I mean, the CEO of Delta came out against it. And I don't know whether he's thinking about people's civil rights or whether he's thinking about economic repercussions. Mm-hmm. But so it just got left on the table, thank goodness. But, you know, I think wherever there are strong, active political contingent of conservative folks, these kind of laws are going to be on the books and waiting to be signed, and it's up for us who see how harmful they are, how dangerous they are, to fight them.
Yeah. When I first heard of your music and started listening to it, it was literally just the music. I didn't know a lot about either one of you. I'm curious. I had Janice Ian on the program about maybe a month ago, and when she was talking about a couple of her breakout hits, which actually came in the 60s and 70s, and she was, 16 when one of them came out, and she would be on stage, and people would yell, nigger, nigger, nigger. And she'd be in tears afterwards, and she couldn't wrap her head around that. When did you guys come out in terms of your lifestyle? Was it early on or a little bit later? And what was that like for you?
It was, I think, around 91 that we came out sort of publicly, technically, in press. I mean, before that, you know, I was out to my family, and I was out, just generally speaking. But we didn't talk about it in the press. And you know, we had a couple of friends that were journalists that were sort of pressing the issue to me, and it just felt like it was always like, I mean, for me, it was just scary, you know, in the press. But when I look back on it, you know, but I think, you know, we were at this like really cool sort of college, Western Mass kind of college press conference with all the colleges in that area. We're all that hotbed of sort of progressive thought, and we were doing a press conference with a bunch of different colleges at one time. I think it was 90 or 91 maybe, and someone asked, and at that point, Emily spoke up and said something about being gay, and that was kind of the first moment. Before that, we had sort of agreed not to talk about it, really, but I personally was hoping to talk about it and really wanted to and felt like it was going to happen sooner than later anyway, and that we should just be, just talk about it. But it was scary, you know, and I think that moment, though, was cool because it was like a college thing, and we just sort of started talking about it, and then that was it. It wasn't like this big, like, national, you know, coming out in The Advocate or something like that. So it was actually really fitting because it was more of an underground, almost casual sort of reference, and then it just felt like it kind of was there to talk about. And it was scary, though, you know, because I think at that point it was still, there was a lot of discrimination just generally in life. In our lives, just, you know, we sort of had the privilege of having a job where we weren't going to get fired from our job, but we definitely were, we had to, you know, we had to deal with the consequences of discrimination at radio stations and people just sort of treating us not in the greatest way all the time, but, and in the press and stuff. But I think, like, for us, it was still an easier ride than it is for a lot of people, you know, because it wasn't like we were teaching at an elementary school somewhere and being accused of pedophilia because we were gay or some weird thing like that. You know what I mean? It was like, and we weren't threatened to, like, get fired or, I mean, we still were in this, I mean, we've always been, as musicians, in this place of privilege in a way and protection because the music kind of shields us, and we do activism and we speak out about issues, and we, you know, we don't have to put our lives on the line to do it. And I think, in a way that makes me feel like we should do it as much as we can, you know? And even when it's scary. And I think when we were young, though, it was early days, you know, it was early days for that. So it was still hard.
Yeah, I bet it was. I bet it was. Let me ask you, in what you're witnessing, you have a unique perspective because both of you not only have your own individual work and passions that you do, but in the traveling that you've done and the celebrity that you have. Are you hopeful about the signs of the times that more and more people are becoming open to marriage equality? And are you hopeful that this week, when the Supreme Court is now taking a look at that, that they'll be finally voting in favor of that?
I feel quite hopeful that the Supreme Court will say no bans on same-sex marriage. And it's kind of awe-inspiring to me that that will happen, but I do believe that will happen. And I am hopeful. I'm hopeful because of the younger generation. I'm hopeful because of youth and the way that they're much more accepting, at least of queer rights. But so I'm hopeful for that. There are other things in the country that I'm not as hopeful about. I'm not feeling particularly hopeful about our situation in relationship to guns. I find that to be this massive, massive integral problem. And the gun psyche of America. And so as far as the Supreme Court and gay marriage, I feel quite hopeful. As far as the issue with guns and violence and racism still, even, I have less hope for the immediate future.
Amy?
Yeah, I agree with Emily. I mean, I think marriage is not the only, you know, issue in the world of queerness, obviously, but I think it has, and I have changed, you know, I used to feel like marriage was really not the only issue, and I really didn't even want to focus on it, but I felt I've been schooled, I think, by the movement a bit, and I feel like, yes, it has opened doors to be focusing on this, and it has definitely opened the way to be able to talk about other issues that are really important, and teen suicide rates among gay youth, and homelessness among gay youth, and drug addiction and prostitution among gay youth. And I think this has ushered in a conversation about those things too. We need to make sure we're giving enough resources to those issues financially, but I definitely was, you know, changed my perspective on the marriage issue and felt and feel like it's, yes, it is very important to be working on it, when in the past I was very, like, we need to work on issues on the street, you know, not an issue that is, you know, a marriage issue. But on the other hand, marriage equality does have to do with class as well, because when you don't have enough money to hire a lawyer to do estate planning and you can't get married to your significant other, you really are in danger of, like, stuff around medical things and inheritance laws and laws around your children and the protection of them and stuff. So
yeah.
I think it's very important to have that. I do feel like we're not free until everyone is free.
Mm-hmm.
And so
mm-hmm.
I think internationally we need to be looking at what's going on with women.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to be looking on at what's going on with race in our own country. And
mm-hmm.
I feel that you should be in your own movement and work on the queer movement, but you need to realize that you need to work on race and class at the same time.
Yeah.
And so I feel really strongly about that. And I think what's going on with race is so scary, you know, and I think, like, I live in, like, a small kind of rural area, and I used to always joke that, you know, a gay person was going to get accepted around here and before a black person was, and unfortunately, I was right.
Yeah,
you know, and so
yeah.
It's a bummer, you know, because it's true. You know, I can walk around as a gay woman, partly because I'm, you know, a musician and kind of people know who I am, and I have money, but I can walk around and be accepted a lot more easily than if I was a person of color. And that, to me, there's something wrong with that. You know, we should all be lifted up at the same time.
Yeah. And so as a sacred activist myself, I'm coming to the conclusion, and in having a few years under my belt, maybe it's less about issues. The real issue is lack of consciousness. Because when we have lack of consciousness, we have all these other ills in society. And so as we mm-hmm. raise consciousness, and I'm thinking again about you guys and everything you've done with your music, and I remember a quote that Judy Collins said. Judy Collins said, "I still believe that music can change the world." And I'm wondering, how do you feel about that, given both of you's gifted writers, performers?
It's so hard to talk about the power of music.
Yeah,
And the world changes in a little bit at a time,
mm-hmm,
and in
mm-hmm,
pockets.
Mm-hmm.
And it, I think consciousness is obviously extremely important. I think that every part of a movement for, you know, a deepening of our humanity and our relationship to the earth and all its creatures and this great gift that we've been given, I think a deepening of that happens across a lot of levels and in a lot of ways. And I think that music can change things broadly and powerfully. Like, if you think about anthems that became sort of the centerpieces of movements, like in South Africa or the civil rights movement, like
yes.
We Shall Overcome, or any number of songs in various movements over time. But I also think that about the way that music affects me on a personal level. When I hear something beautiful or powerful, it stirs something in me that actually makes me want to live a deeper life. And so I think music changes us personally. It changes
mm-hmm.
us in group settings.
Mm-hmm.
It inspires us. You know, even if it's Fleetwood Mac's Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow, and it's a political rally. You know?
Absolutely.
I mean, music is a physical thing, and we vibrate as physical beings, and so
yeah.
It's a very, very meta
yeah.
relationship, and I have no doubt that it's a critical part of change for good.
And when you entwine the lyrics, the music, and especially the presence that both of you have when you perform, that is something powerful. I want to cut to another song, and this is Galileo. There's some lyrics in that song that to me also speaks to really kind of what's going on today. And these particular lyrics say, "How long till my soul gets it right? Can any human being ever reach the highest light? I call on the resting soul of Galileo, king of night, vision, king of insight." And it's really about all of us, trying to reach that highest light. Any quick words about that song? We'll cut to the song and then finish our conversation.
Well, I think human beings are sort of, we're fallible, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
So we're constantly striving to, let's say, very simply, be better, for
yeah.
lack of a better word.
Yeah.
So that's the struggle, that's the beauty. As we evolve, if we're talking about social and civil rights, any like increment of evolution in that is a very deep thing, and I think it shifts the molecules around, and it makes our experience as human beings better, and it changes the world for the better. So,
yeah.
But it is a constant. It's a journey, and it's a struggle, and it takes hard work, and you know, sometimes one step forward, two steps back. But
that's true.
It's part of the beauty of the challenge, you know.
Yeah.
At this point in life, I don't need things or want things to be easy all the time. I do recognize that the struggle is part of the beauty of the whole thing.
Yeah. I'm Richard Brendan. It's a delight for me to have two very talented artists, two very compassionate human beings, Grammy Award-winning artist and social change artist, Amy Ray, Emily Saliers, known to many as Indigo Girls. We'll continue the conversation, but now we're going to go to another one of their great songs, Galileo.
On the block, the crime was looking up the truth, and as the bombshells of my daily fears explode, I try to trace them to my youth. And then you had to bring up reincarnation over a couple of beers the other night. And now I'm serving time for mistakes made by another in another lifetime. How long till my soul gets it right? Did any human being ever reach that kind of light? I call on the resting soul of Galileo.
I think I'll write a book. How long?
Welcome back to the program. I'm Richard Brendan. We're bringing love to life today with the Indigo Girls. It's a joy and an honor to have them on. I want to talk about your activism. And by the way, on the Indigo Girls website, there's an activism page that includes information about your involvement in something that I just love, and that's Honor the Earth, a project that focuses on environmental justice and indigenous rights. Can you speak more about that, how you got involved and in what that is about? Amy?
Emily?
Oh.
Oh, okay. I feel like I've just been talking so much. We met Winona LaDuke. She is from the White Earth Reservation in Minnesota, and she's a great leader, an indigenous leader and community leader. And we met her at an Earth Day at Foxborough Stadium in 1991. And Amy started talking to her. And before that, Amy and I had done sort of mainstream environmental group work, like with Greenpeace or folks like that. But then we started to realize through talking with Winona that we could only see environmentalism through sort of an indigenous lens, because there is no separation between traditional indigenous ways of life and their relationship to the earth and protecting it, not only for us now, but for future generations.
Mm-hmm.
And so we decided to join our work with Winona, and we started Honor the Earth, and we focus a lot right now on environmental justice issues. Like, we have fought historically against nuclear waste dumping and against mining, against fracking, against the pipeline, the XL pipeline, any number of things that fall disproportionately on Indian land, but they're issues that affect all of us. And so we've been very inspired by the work in Native communities as they follow their, you know, their whole way of being in relationship to the earth. And so we work on in working on solar projects and wind projects and green energy projects to sort of shift the U.S. energy paradigm into one that's focused on sustainability. And that's the work that Honor the Earth does, in addition to language restoration, community support, land restoration, all kinds of community and social issues, youth projects in native lands. So it is an organization that works on all those things, but with regard to the environment, it's energy justice issues. And Amy and I sort of act as a liaison between Indian, native and non-native communities, and we play shows and write political action letters and gather communities together to learn about the things that are going on environmentally and what we can all do to be part of that to make change.
Mm. Amy, I'll start with you on this question. Do you feel connected to any particular spiritual tradition these days?
Well, I was raised a Methodist, and that's sort of my construct, I guess, in a way, you know, in the Joseph Campbell language. I definitely feel like I borrow from a lot of different traditions, which is kind of not very disciplined, but the truth. Where I'm sort of a pagan that has this belief in Jesus, but I really love Buddhism. I find Hinduism to be fascinating. I love the sort of old mystical Judaism a lot. I love the writings of Buber. There's just a lot to me in religion that is just rich and powerful, and I find it to be sustaining in many ways, you know, to my faith, that there is a greater mystery to the world, and that everything is sacred and should be treated as such. And, you know, I find my greatest powerful experience are outside of walls instead of within walls, usually, as far as like nature and everything. I kind of feel like you know, like on the Waltons, you know, where he never went to church.
Yeah.
He wanted to worship in the mountains, basically. Kind of like, that's kind of the way I feel about life. And my dad was sort of similar. So, but I was a religion major, and I think I felt really called to study religions and sort of almost figure my path out in some way, and at one point even wanted to go to theology school, but I just I could never really settle on anything, and I feel so drawn to so many different parts, and I find that it's, you know, many paths to the same place, really, you know, and so I have a, I like to go to different services, I like to experience different styles of worship and just get something out of, I can find something to appreciate in most everything, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Emily, how about you? Your spiritual path now, today?
Spirit is sort of the thing that I believe in. I believe in, it feels like spirit. I call it God. It's not a he, a she, or an it. It's just beyond words that I have to describe it. And I think that it works most powerfully when I engage in spiritual practice. So if I try to live my life to be kind and empathetic and to have some discipline and to not waste gifts and to take care of creatures and my peeps and all those things that are like, you know, practices of life that deepen the human experience, then I feel like that spirit works well.
Yeah.
With
yeah.
that, encourages that. And I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah.
And I have great, great belief in the, you can't argue with the teachings of Jesus, the stories of Jesus, you know. But I'm not a straight up Christian because I think I'm Jewish as well, you know. Like, I really, God is my focus. And I have deep respect for all the tenets of the major faiths and even not major, and they all basically are about the same thing to me. That's kind of where my spiritual practice stands.
Yeah, I find that, well, that's exactly where I'm at, where both of you guys are at. I've often said now my sanctuary is either nature or the radio station. And to have wonderful wonderful conversations with people like you. I want to thank you guys so much for graciously sharing your time with us today and also for gifting this world with such incredible music. I can't wait for the new album to come out. When we end this interview, and by the way, for more information and for people to be updated about everything both of you are doing, indigogirls.com is a website. I also want to direct people to honorearth.org. That is a beautiful website, too, where people might want to get more involved in that particular organization that you talked about. At the end of the interview, I'm going to cut to another song, and I have to admit, I think I have to blame Amy for this. I have been possessed by this song all day today. This, I can't get it out of my head, and this is a true story. We've had some pretty decent weather here. My window was down. I was at a stoplight, and I seat dance a lot. So I'm seat dancing, but the song was on loud. I had no idea it was that loud, and I was singing. I forgot my window was down, and there's this big burly guy in a big old pickup truck looking at me, laughing his head off, and all of a sudden my face got red, and I scrunched in the seat. The light, thank God, turned green, and I just went on and continued the dance with the song. On this show, we talk about bringing love to life, loving ourselves, one another, and the earth. This song is Share the Moon. So.
Oh, yeah. I love this song. There's not that many of my songs where I can just say, yeah, I like this song, but this one I actually do. I really do. I really feel good about it. I wrote it at about 3 in the morning in Greenville, North Carolina, while I was in the middle of making a different record, a solo record, a few years back. And it's just, it's a love song. It's just a pure love song. But the arrangement was really created beautifully by our rhythm section. It's really the musicians that played on it made it what it is. So, that's what it is.
Well, we're going to go to that. In the meantime, Amy and Emily, thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you so much, Richard. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. I encourage you to visit their website again. That is indigogirls.com. And now here's that song that, yes, is still in my head, Share the Moon. Thank you.
I can go one day without calling, 2 days without bawling, 3 days without missing, but a lifetime of no kissing you. Something that I just can't do. I wish I could be there to share the moon. I got more back for the breaking, more callous for making, a lifetime for the aching. I got no need to run this battery down. I'm just trying to get the stain down. I wish I could be there to share the moon. Hey, la, la. I'm gonna love you till it hurts. I don't mind if I do. Hey, la, la. I'm gonna love you till it works. I got no mind to lose. Fireflies are returning, nightfall is soft for chirping, one trail of light is staying on till dawn. I wonder who it's waiting on. I wish I could be there to share the moon. Hey, I'm gonna love you till it hurts. I don't mind if I do. Hey, la, la. I'm gonna love you till it works. I got no mind to lose.
Such a fan of their music and also their activism. Before I share a few thoughts and play one final song, here's another word from the rest of our sponsors.
Wellness is an active process of becoming more aware and making better choices that move you in the direction of a more successful life. Choices to eat well, move well, and think well enable your body to live well. When your spine is aligned properly, your brain and body are connected. Stillpoint Family Chiropractic is a family wellness center where we focus on your lifestyle and the impact it has on your spine, brain, and your life. Find us on Facebook at Stillpoint Family Chiropractic, or our phone number is 317-863-0365.
Richard Brendan, Bringing Love to Life, is underwritten in part by Natural Awakenings magazine. Each month, Natural Awakenings takes a practical look at the latest natural approaches to nutrition, fitness, creative expression, personal growth, and sustainable living. The magazine also covers the products and services that support a healthy lifestyle. Natural Awakenings magazine is a free publication and can be found at most healthy lifestyle outlets. Their website is awakenindy.com.
And now, the Vogue in 30 seconds. This week at The Vogue in the heart of Broad Ripple Village in concert.
On Friday, July 22nd, official DJ Marcus wedding reception, Vogue Dance Club. One night only, doors open at 10. And Saturday, the 23rd, Do 317 presents Saved by the 90s.
The Vogue, rockin' Broad Ripple for 38 years. For more information, call 317-259-7029 or visit thevogue.com.
Recently, we've witnessed shootings in Orlando, state of Louisiana, Minnesota, Dallas, Texas. As we watch what's unfolding around the world, our hearts are telling us that it's time to raise the temperature of love. It's time to create a transformation that is unprecedented and lifts this planet into a greater expression of love. Here's what I believe. The world now is too dangerous and too beautiful for anything but love. We're in the midst of great change, and it is an auspicious time to be alive. Carl Jung said, "Where love rules, there is no will to power, and where power predominates, love is lacking. The one is the shadow of the other." When confronted with our own mortality and inner wounds, we have two options: either to lash out at others with pain, or choose the power of love to heal ourselves and then others. Well, I don't know about you, but I stand for this. Despite the senseless acts of violence that are happening, this world is not a tragic mistake. With all its flaws, it is a sacred path to our destiny as human beings. An epic paradigm shift is unfolding. Consciousness is at the heart of this shift, and action is its worldly expression. May we rekindle our sense of hope and possibility. May we keep our hearts and minds inspired through daily practice, coming together in community to share dreams, celebrate life, and implement action. So the call goes out to all men and women to wipe the sleep from their eyes and to awaken to their own greatness and to become warriors of the heart. To bring love to life, it'll be up to us, the dreamers, healers, artists, evolutionaries, all perfect in our own imperfections, to help create a new world, because love is all we've ever needed. So in closing, let's go to a final Indigo Girls song, since they model what I just talked about. It's called Perfect World.
We get to be a ripple in the water. We get to be a rock that's thrown. We get to be a boy on the bridge, standing over the reservoir. I see the water lap along the shoreline, buried forest of a man-made lake. The cemeteries are laying underneath it, your heart like a dam when it breaks. We're floating, we're swimming, and in this moment we are forgetting what it costs, what it takes for one perfect world when we look the other way. If I don't see beyond the shore, and I'm okay, but I don't have to do the killing or know what the killing's for. We're talking, we're driving, and in this moment we are denying what it costs, what it takes. Isolation and the miracle of daybreak doesn't move you anymore. Connect the points and see the constellations as the night comes down on the reservoir. We are swimming, we are floating, and in this moment we are beholden to what it costs, to what it takes.
Can we learn to live? yet to be a ripple in the water.
That is today's program. Our website is richardbrendan.org. All shows are podcast on that site. And for engineer Sarah Smith and production coordinator Angel Richardson, I'm Richard Brendan. We're bringing love to life, one broadcast at a time.